Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, autumn, it's underway officially. And if the leaves in your backyard haven't started changing yet, they will be soon. And here for the first gardening show of the autumn, our trio of experts, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They are here to answer your gardening questions and help make sure your yard is prepared for the fall. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Usually a popular show when the gardeners are here. So call early. Bob, Fred, Greg, your gardening call's coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, first gardening show of the fall, and joining us to answer your questions, the familiar and friendly and knowledgeable people you know and you love. Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York is here. Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington is here. They are all here to answer your questions. We welcome them now at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you're the shy and retiring type. It's voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. The number, however, is 800-348-2551. If you're outgoing, you like to hear your voice, call us, and then just turn the radio down before you're on the air. Otherwise, it's the echo. Hey, gentlemen, welcome.
It's great to be here.
Good to be here.
Happy autumn.
It's now here outside the scenic WAMC studios, it's raining.
It is.
And yeah, we were talking before about how terribly dry it is.
It's incredibly dry, so we're definitely thankful for the rain. This time of year, most of the trees, most of the plants really do a lot of storing to get through the winter and leaf out next spring. And a lot of times people think, well, it's cooler, I don't need to water as much. But this is probably one of the most important times to water not only your new plantings, but even your established trees.
Yeah. And if you planted something this year and you're not watering it now, you're making a mistake.
Yeah, you're just
this rain's not going to do it.
Yeah, you and Greg were quite adamant that this is not enough rain.
It's not enough. We're not going to get enough.
Watering is going to be easy and continue.
He's on mic four. That's okay. All right.
Oh, I can't hear myself.
You're not. It's not working.
It's not coming through.
All right, let's try mic three. Okay. Yeah, let's try mic three. That's a great idea.
That's got action.
Okay, this is fun. Adventures.
There we go.
Is he working now?
Can you hear me?
Is anything working?
Can I hear me?
Yeah, oh, there we are. Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. Go. All right, let's start the show again. You know, it's raining out.
You know, we really need that rain. We're really glad for it because things are dry out there.
Things are dry.
Nice. Oh, good heavens. All right, this email came in from Suzanne. Suzanne writes, my two peach trees did not produce any fruit this year. Is there anything I can do now to help them for next spring? Or if not now, what about an early spring? Thanks so much. Love the show. And that's from Suzanne.
Water them.
Yeah. Well, water them so they make it through the winter.
Right.
But that's a great question because people often ask that. And realizing the cycle of the plant, I think, is what the lesson we'd all like people to learn. And that is that the flower buds that are going to open next spring and hopefully get pollinated to make peaches are already on the plant. They're there right now just waiting for winter to pass. So other than watering, as we're saying, just to make sure the tree is well hydrated, there's nothing you can do until spring. Some pruning in the spring is really going to make sure that the plant doesn't get too many fruits on it,
right,
that it has a good shape and that it is able to hold the fruits it has. And then, of course, there's a little bit of Mother Nature with the pollination that we are going to need to see. So a lot of rain while the flowers are out and open is never great for pollination. So
When you don't get fruit, it could be because the blossoms got hurt by a frost.
It could be from the past winter.
It could be that it didn't flower very much, in which case something else is going on.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to put down a little bit of an organic type fertilizer, a complete fertilizer with trace elements. And, time for that is kind of – we're getting really close to that ideal time for fall fertilization. I always say half the leaves are gone on your plant, and then that plant is mostly asleep. great time to put fertilizer down without worrying about maybe stimulating late season growth that can get damaged. So you want to not go too early in the fall. Later fall is better. The roots are going to stay active right up through November and into the ground's pretty much frozen.
And that's excellent for the next year's flowers.
That's right.
Not 2020's flowers, but 2021.
That's right. Yeah.
Are peaches sometimes alternate, like some apples? You get a heavy crop one year and then...
You know, I think most plants and fruit trees can't just produce. So it's not like they're not going to produce any, but it's hard for them to set that heavy fruit every single year. Yeah.
And then
so generally, you know, you will see some light fruiting and then some heavier fruiting. Right. And also, we don't know this because we don't have the inside information, but we don't know if some of those those peaches may have formed and then were picked off with birds or squirrels or something like that early on before they ever really noticed it. So there's another option too. Maybe she did have a good fruit set.
We noticed some odds and ends of no pollination, and then of course good pollination because of the rain that we had.
Yes, true. It was rainy at that time,
and the peaches tend to bloom a little earlier. So
it's raining, the bees are not.
It's very possible it was simply that.
Yep. And if you did have a couple of peaches in there, it would not be a bad idea to help get a little bit of cross pollination. They usually say a lot of times you don't need too many peaches in order to do that because they are self pollinating in most cases. Mm. But that doesn't mean so are apples self pollinating, but they really need extra help. So that's why they always emphasis on cross pollination and different species, or at least different genetics.
All right, this email came in, and this one is from Barbara. Best to fertilize for flowers now or in spring?
Fall and spring, best time. You know, late fall, as we mentioned, is great. Spring early before leaf out.
All right, let's get back to the phones now, and then we'll do some more emails at the break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We begin with Harriet in Woodstock. Hello, Harriet.
Hi. So here's my question, kind of about what you were talking about. I have a very old, very large maple tree that grows right next to the house. And it has a beautiful root flare and everything. And it has lost almost all its leaves already, starting maybe a month ago. And I've never seen it do that. And I then noticed on my neighbor's property, a similar, though not so big maple, is doing the same thing. But other trees don't seem to be doing that. Do you think?
So did it turn a nice color and then start to lose its leaves?
No, it just crinkled up and turned brown and fell off.
Okay, so they never actually got to a fall color. These actually kind of wrinkled up and fell off.
And when you said a month ago, do you mean September?
Almost.
September 1st or August 1st?
Let's see. Around September, beginning of September.
Yeah, could be partly the drought, and also there's certainly fungal issues that get on maples when we have a wet year like we had early. It's not now, maybe a combination of both.
And the fact that the leaves did persist and were hopefully active into September, gives it certainly a reasonable chance that that the buds formed, of course, and that it is just dropping early due to some stress.
Yeah, I know what we were just talking about this before we went online here, and crab apples this year are really bad in terms of foliar diseases. So, but it's not life-threatening, and the reason for that is sort of what Greg just mentioned about your maple, is that it's falling off later season. So the plants have a lot of time to put a lot of energy together that they're going to store for next year's leaf out. If this kind of happened early in the season, like early summer, late spring, very catastrophic, very, very bad. So my gut feeling would be that it's probably in pretty good shape. It'll probably come back next year looking pretty good.
They can lose their leaves early year after year, somewhat early. Somewhat early year after year and be fine.
Yeah, as long as it's that later summer. So I'm tending to think probably more of a foliar type of thing, or a little bit of stress combination with the lack of water, especially if you were as dry as we were later season. And sometimes if they're a little stressed, they will shed those off. Just, hey, it's time to go to sleep. We can't hold this all together.
So water.
Water.
I mean, you're willing to soak the ground around that tree with some additional watering, that would really go a long way to...
That would take putting a hose on it or a soaker hose or something and leaving it for a day
for hours,
two.
Actually.
Yeah, hours.
Yeah. It's a huge tree. She's
that's
very
right.
old.
And you would only need to do one good watering per week from now till it goes, till the ground starts to freeze. And that
even,
would be the
even
you know,
one
the
good one would do it.
Probably one really serious one. It would
helpful.
Be helpful.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, thanks a lot, Harriet. We appreciate it. Let's grab another one before the break. And Prescott in Clifton Park, you're on.
Yes, I recently took out about a dozen trees in the backyard, and I have needed to level out the yard and get it perhaps some topsoil applied. Would it be worthwhile for me to consider hydro seeding this year, or do I have to put it off until the spring?
I'd go ahead and get it done as quick as you can. You might still get that up this fall. The trick is keeping it wet. If you water it, it grows, and if you don't, it doesn't.
That seems to be the theme here.
Yeah.
It seems, we used to say October 1st, it's kind of getting late, and now we're saying, October 15th, it's getting kind of late.
A little warmer, a little later.
Yeah, as long as the temperatures still stay warm, because otherwise you won't get the grass germinating.
Soil temperatures are going to be 55 degrees. And, if it's 65, 70 degrees on the air, you're fine.
Yep, and if you can just get it up, get it to sprout and get it to grow, you're going to have you're going to be way ahead of schedule for next year.
And if you're willing to use...
So 25 degrees isn't going to cause it any grief.
Not if it's up for a little bit, no. But the hydro seeding also, that's a mulch in addition to the seed, and that will really help everything. So I would say if you can do it in the next week or 10 days, yeah.
All right, Prescott, we have to take a break. Thanks for the call. It's Gardening Today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, you, me, we're all here. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Gardening Today, the first one of autumn with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. A few emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one came in from Rita. Help, I planted three-year trees at least 5 years ago. One flowered year before last, but no fruit. There are four trees about 15 feet apart. I don't remember the type, but chosen for compatibility with pollinating.
All right,
they're apple trees.
I was going to say, it sounds like apples.
Hang on. I should read the subject headings.
Okay.
The subject heading is 8 to 10 year apple trees never fruited.
Yep.
So she's saying, how long has she had them?
Planted 3 year trees at least 5 years ago.
So I'm thinking like an 8 year old plant.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit early. Sometimes it takes a few years to really get them growing.
Right. Some of the things we were talking about before, whether you got good pollination. The first question I ask is, are they in a lot of sun? Because if they're not in a lot of sun, they'll flower. They'll grow leaves, but they won't flower.
Yep. Yeah. And then there are some varieties that are a little hardier around here. So depending on the microclimate that she's planting them in, there are just some varieties that are never going to get a real good fruit set. Because they're just not the plant is cold hardy for our area, but the flower buds are marginal.
Right.
And
we
hear that sometimes with some varieties of hydrangea, and there's other plants out there.
And usually that's only
well.
A problem if you did mail order and you weren't paying attention or something.
Yep.
If you got them locally, they're usually
pretty
hardy.
Solid.
But I would say that if it's a 3 year tree, and if that's true, that's a fairly small tree. That's not a very big tree.
She planted it at 3 years.
Yes.
Is that the point?
3 year old tree.
Gotcha.
And now it's a total of 8 years, but it's probably just getting to the size where it would consistently flower.
Okay.
Yep. So it might be like just getting there next year. It sounds
the
like
the real question
probably
is in the spring. If you get flowers and you don't get fruit, that's one thing.
Then
if you don't get flowers,
pollination
that's a
issue.
Whole different thing.
Okay.
Yep. And again, we talked about fertilizer for that person. I'd recommend 3 year old trees. This is wait till the leaves are pretty much gone. Another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, start putting some little bit of fertilizer down organic.
All right, 10-4. This one came in from Greg. How far should I trim my grapes back before winter?
Mm.
Also, somebody told me this is the time of year I should mow my raspberry bushes right to the ground. Two questions from Greg. Let's go with the grapes first.
So grapes, you can do some pruning. Usually you're doing it winter, spring, so it's a little early.
Okay.
The plants are still growing. But you're taking them back you know, 90% of what grew out this year, you're removing. There's this place where the wood changes considerably. You have these long tendrils that all the leaves are on. As you follow them back, suddenly it's thicker. There's sort of little bony aspects to the wood.
Yeah.
And that's where the flower buds are going to be. And if you there's a few orchards around here or grape vineyards. Thank you
that's
for that.
That's right.
And so if you take a look at what they do and when they do it, that pretty much
you
would
can get
it.
Really nice pictures online too. It's pretty dramatic. You trim grapes a lot, so a picture helps you realize how much.
Right. And what about the whole business about mowing the raspberry bushes to the ground?
Yeah, that's
There's
I like
different
that.
Different thoughts on that, isn't there?
If you have, ever blooming or twice fruiting raspberries, mm-hmm. then mowing them to the ground in the fall means that they'll grow up in the spring, flower in the summer, and fruit again in the fall. So right now, if you have that type, you would still be harvesting.
There's a lot of fruit.
It would be
right
a little
now.
Early to be yeah. mowing them down. If you have the type that only fruits in the summer, you don't actually mow the whole thing down, because what is going to produce the fruit for next June, July is there right now.
Okay.
And so you have to be able to determine which are the old ones, which are the new ones, take out the old ones,
right.
shorten the new ones if you want, but we'll leave them up till
now,
next
in
year.
In nature, they would be left be. I mean, what happens if you leave them be?
They would. You'd still get fruit. The thing is, you can get more fruit if we do specific pruning to plants.
They're going to die off the older canes no matter what.
Yeah. Okay.
But you make it a little quicker.
Yeah, that's a good question, because people ask me that. You know, what you guys recommend so many different things. Yeah. I mean, what do they do in nature? And that's a really good question. And the thing is, they will do a lot of really good, and they will produce, and they will get fruit. And
yeah.
But they won't get as much as if you actually right. tailor that.
And there's
that
also
sort of
a lot of potential virus, fungus issues
right.
that you are eliminating by cutting them down and removing all
okay.
of that.
Yeah, partly in nature, it's supposed to actually like sort of just self-destruct in a way.
Okay, this one is from Andrew. I'm getting apple scab as well as small tent caterpillars on my apple trees. I use Bonide orchard spray regularly, but it's not cutting it. I rake leaves, mow the area, nitrogen fertilizer as everyone recommends. I prune in late winter as well. What next? And that's from Andrew.
You know, she's off to a real good start. You know, I would
Andrew,
say
it's a he.
He, sorry right. about that. He's off to a really good start. What I would say is that, you know, first off, it's apple scab. This is a crazy year for it. Like I said, it's prolific. It's one of the worst years I've personally seen around Capital Region, and so I wouldn't worry too much about that. Raking the leaves up, getting those leaves off site helps to reduce the amount of inoculum for next year. The spores will literally lay in the ground or on that foliage and in the soil, and then it'll reinfect the plant. So if you can get them out as you go, it'll help. Will it control it? To a degree, but it won't stop it. And then the tent caterpillars, it's coming at a time when it's not really an issue. So I would say that's more of an aesthetic control.
Yeah.
If you really
fall.
Don't like it unsightly,
fall
and it's
webworm.
Fall webworm most right. likely. Although spring tent caterpillar is around.
It's popping up again?
It's in around in the spring and fall.
Yeah.
And fall webworm's not around in the spring. It's only in the fall. But the big difference is you'll know it, because spring tent caterpillars like to say build a little pup tent, and they go out into the foliage and they come back to that little pup tent,
yeah.
if you want to think of it. The tent caterpillars actually build a cocoon around all the foliage, and then they eat everything in there, and then they move it. So that's a real easy way to distinguish between which pest it is. But either way, the same answer. If it's eating 3/4 of your tree, maybe. But otherwise, I would, it's an aesthetic thing.
Okay.
We don't
also,
even
you
normally
can,
control.
So unless these are homeowner trees, I assume he doesn't have 100 trees in a
right.
row. So spraying them is probably not necessary. He could probably get rid of all of them by just getting out there and scraping the nets out.
That's what I've done too.
Yep. Yep, prune the branch.
Yep. You could use like gloves and actually just squash them all too.
All right, two more emails here. This one's from Diane, a new New York State resident, primary residence, Long Island. I'm wondering what time of year is best to plant trees such as fruit, weeping willow, and cedar.
You know, spring and fall are always going to be your best times to install plants. It's going to be a little easier to get them established and less care, less water.
Yeah.
Can you plant trees in the middle of summer, even during drought times? Yeah,
sure.
But you have to really be willing to put that water and that care. So spring and fall, ideal. As long as you can get water to them in a readily, then
in general, your selection at your local nursery is going to be better in the spring.
That's true.
But there's a lot of values in the fall when we start putting stuff on sale.
And that's the other side of it. And if you are looking for a rare thing or something very unusual, a lot of times people say, well, I'll get to my nursery early in the spring.
Yeah.
But actually, they're doing most of the, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, you're doing a lot of your ordering in the fall.
Yeah.
So
if you really want something special
in the spring, you better order it sometime soon.
And if you just to elaborate, if you are looking for those particular things, if you check around, a few different nurseries, garden centers, you may find one here, one there, and be able to be set up.
Okay. Last email for now. This one's from John. Can someone recommend a hardy bamboo cultivar for our area? All the types I've researched are rather costly, so I would appreciate a suggestion for a variety which the cold won't kill. Also, could our Mets have made the playoffs if that bum Cespedes were healthy? Go Polar Bear. Well, Jack, that's another story, and we won't go into that now because I'll get upset. Let's just talk about bamboo.
Let's get back to the bamboo.
Yeah,
you got to be careful with that.
We offer Fargesia. The genus Fargesia is a clumping bamboo, which means it doesn't spread significantly. It stays in its wherever you put it, and it. It's a short, relatively short bamboo. They don't get taller than 3 feet or so, maybe four at the most.
Yeah.
But they are all, or several of the species and selections are listed as zone 5 or even a little bit of zone 4, depending. So that's the hardiest bamboo if you're looking for one.
Okay. Let's go to Helena in South Hadley. You're on. Hello.
Hi. I have a mulberry tree that has, it's in the wrong place. It's right near my clothesline, so I would like to either move it or take some of the seedlings that I've found cropped up all over the yards and transplant those, but I have no idea whether I should try to move the tree or if the seedlings might be more successful because they're smaller.
You know, with mulberry, you'd probably be all right doing both or either one. We're heading into the time of year. I'd wait a little bit longer, a couple more weeks. But we are getting to that point where we're getting into transplant season. I would recommend watering anything that you're going to try to move at least a few days before. Make sure they're well hydrated. And even if some of that soil falls off, if the leaves are pretty much off the plant, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I would imagine that would be the case. It's like moving a sleeping baby from one room to another, and when it wakes up, it really doesn't know it was moved. Same kind of concept with these plants. Mulberries are really tough, so
really
you should have really good results with that transplant project. So good luck on that.
Okay, now, the other thing is, how big do they get?
Well, mulberries could get quite large.
How big? The one you have? The one you want to move?
I would say it's probably, I'm not good at this. Huh. Maybe 12 feet tall.
Oh,
it's
boy.
Not that big around.
How
skinny.
How thick is the trunk? 3 inches, 2 inches across?
I can get my hand around it, so I'd say maybe
two or three.
Okay.
3.5 inches.
That's pretty good size.
So it is.
That's a substantial move.
It's going to be a lot of work.
Do you have friends?
Okay, so well, that's what I'm going to find out.
Yep, the good.
Well, we're going to
test that. One good thing about moving a large tree like this, and if you had something positive to say, because it's going to be a heavy root ball and so forth and so on, but mulberries being tough, you're doing it when it's dormant, so you wait a couple more weeks, you hydrate it well, you make sure when you plant it, you rematch the grade. So even if a lot of that soil falls off the root ball, which is actually probably a good thing in a way from in terms of moving it because it'll be a lot lighter.
Yeah.
Even if that soil falls off, as long as the roots aren't all broken and you water it before, you're probably going to still be okay. Just make sure that the grade, in other words, the depth of which it's planted at now matches what you're sort of going to install it in, not deeper.
And move a few of those little seedlings just in case.
Good plan. Insurance. Helena, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop Gardening Today with Greg Ward, Bob Graves, and Fred Breglia. Jessica in Clinton Corners. Jessica, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I had a quick question in reference to my hydrangea bush. I had transplanted it. I got it from my mother-in-law. And it hasn't bloomed since I've transplanted it. I was wondering if you could give me some insight as to why and what I could do.
Do we know what type of hydrangea, what color flowers it had?
It has a beautiful blue bloom that changes into a purple and then a pink and a white, different shades.
Macrophylla types have some trouble reblooming in this climate.
Yeah.
There's lots of recommendations for that, aren't there, guys?
There sure are. You know, one of them, which we've heard a lot here on the show, and we sort of preach this quite a bit, is a lot of fertilizer. The hydrangeas need a lot, especially those types. They're picky. They like a lot of food. They like a lot of nutrition in order to put that heavy flower set out. Also, there's some discrepancy in terms of whether those buds are going to actually make it through the winter. So the old location might have been a little bit less windy, might have been a little microclimate within your site or off-site or whatever, a little bit different. This one might be a little bit colder. So the flower buds get damaged, but the foliage buds are much hardier. So you have tons of great foliage, but not enough much flowers. And I would think it would be some combination of those two things.
Yeah. And so just... No pruning. You know, I don't know how long you've had it. If it's been just one winter, and you whether you did or not,
I've had it. Right, I've had it for about 5 years, but I do notice in the fall the deer eat it down.
Yeah,
okay, it's like one of their favorite things.
Yeah, so if you can protect it from the deer, try to not prune any of the wood until spring, and only the dead wood at that point. We over in the Berkshires we have a hard time as well, and so. Burying some of the base of the plant can protect some of that wood, and there are often flower buds along the wood a little lower on the plant as well. So pushing compost up around the plant for the winter time, November, Thanksgiving through 1st of April, and then if the deer are browsing, try to keep them off of it. That will go a long way.
In the spring, you want to remove that material. If you do push it up in against the stems, in the spring, you scrape it back out. Kind of like we do with trying to overwinter some marginal roses. We call it winter mulching sometimes.
Right.
When you sort of bury the crown, but you definitely want to unbury it in the spring. Otherwise, you'll
fertilize them in the spring a lot more than you think you should.
Yep.
Would you recommend a burlap?
Sure.
Like a burlap sack?
You could wrap it.
The burlap will definitely keep the deer away, and it can reduce, some
winter kill.
Yeah, some winter kill.
Yep, and if you use a little fence around it, sort of staked up and a little fence around it to keep the deer out, then the burlap can actually just get hung around that fence, and you kind of have a 1-2 combo going on there, and it certainly would help. Fertilizer on top of that, I think you're going to have some blooms.
All right, Jessica, thank you very much for the call. And now to Alan in Feeding Hills. Alan.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have a question about overseeding lawn. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to overseed. I already bought the seed, and I have a lot of mole trails all over the lawn right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid if I rent an overseeder and do any ground impacting, I'm just going to tear the whole thing up. What do you recommend is the best way? I get rid of the moles for one thing. Can I just overseed with a drop spreader kind of passively instead of using a machine?
The seed has to come in contact with the soil, so it depends on how much thatch and how much grass is interfering with that seed's ability to come in contact with the soil. You can chew it up lightly with a rake. You can overseed it with a drop spreader. You can get a machine. There's things called slit seeders or vertical rakes that won't chew it up too much. To get rid of the moles, you might try a repellent. There are some various oils. A lot of them are castor oil based, just to try to move them out of the way. But that's not going to preclude your seeding.
Yeah.
So I'd go ahead and seed it regardless.
The seed's still going to germinate, still going to come up. Go ahead.
Right. I don't have to repair the mole trail. Just squish them down. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, exactly. Just get some more grass growing.
Yeah, and a lot of times those moles are eating grubs that are in the lawn, so you might consider an organic product that's called Milky Spore Disease. It's not any kind of chemical. This is something that's a biological killer. It's a fungal type of thing. You get it in the lawn, and it eats and kills the Japanese beetle grubs. And if that's something that you have as a problem, it would reduce the amount of moles, therefore, feeding, because they're not eating really the grass.
They're after to the neighbors.
They're after the grubs. They might go to your
just
neighbors.
Chase them over.
That's
we'll give you a raise address.
Yeah, but so all of those things, I think, would help you out a real lot there.
All right, Alan, thanks for the call. And now quickly, and we'll take one more here before our next break, we go to Linda in Glens County. Where's that, Linda?
Hi, Orange County.
Oh, Orange County, says Glens County.
You're
on.
Oh, thank you. Hi. I have a small hemlock, I'll say 6 feet maybe tall, and it's the second year I've had it planted. And this year it just is losing needles. They're turning yellow and then brown, and it's not really doing much growth on top, although I did get some growth on the tips of the, you know, the apical meristem area, I guess you'd call it or whatever, but it's losing needles from the bottom and a little bit on the top.
So you had it all last summer?
I had it, yeah, last summer, and
It grew out. It looked good. Year. It looked good all last summer and grew out, and now it went through the winter and here it is again.
It never seemed like it's been thriving since I planted it, but it definitely is growing. I noticed the new growth on the tips, and it actually made little cones this year, but the cones look like they might be dying too now. They're not opening and turning brown.
So there's probably a few things we could certainly suggest. The one is our mantra for the show, which is water. That you would, even though you planted it last year, that you would or should have been watering it certainly through at least July, August of this year, through the sort of drought period that we were getting. And if you haven't been doing that, it's probably still not too late, especially if overall the plant has green needles everywhere. It's just that there's less of them. Then watering still is certainly something that can bring them back.
They don't like to get too dry, hemlocks. No. They like to be a little moist.
No, no, a few other things you might...
Oh, okay, because I sort of have clayish soil outside of what I planted it in, which I need a nice mixture, but it's somewhat clayish here.
Even this year, that clay soil's dry, you know? And then we've also been mentioning, and this is sort of a longer-term thing for next year, as long as it winters through, is adding some kind of granular fertilizer to this plant. And you could do that later this fall in October, and or you could be doing it in the spring. And then I don't know if you want to talk about the depth thing.
Yeah, I had a couple other options that if it just didn't look good all the way through and never really looked that good, then there's a few other options. One of them is if it's not planted at the right depth, if it's planted too deep, then you'll know this because at the place where the trunk meets the roots, it should have a flare. It should flare out. If you look around your neighborhood or even in your yard, any of your larger trees.
I know what it is,
yeah. So you want to make sure that flare is very visible and it's actually either at ground level or slightly above. If it's down below or you don't see the flare, that is never a good thing. And then the other thing I would suggest would be to just look at the needles and see if you see any little cottony, fluffy white, and this is going to be really small because it could be an adelgid in there. It sounds more cultural
to me. I'm looking for anything white and fluffy.
Okay.
And there's nothing.
Because that would be hemlock woolly adelgid, which is bad. But
turning yellow and then brown and then falling.
Which is more than likely drought stress. Just the plant, you know, was as a 6-foot plant, I'm sure this was bald and burlapped when it went in the ground. That means it has to root out of that again to really succeed. And there has not, although we had a lot of water last fall, we have not had a lot of water since April. And then if you do find that it's a little too deep, simply pulling the soil away to expose root flare, you know, a foot or more out can often be good enough, especially if it's just an inch or two.
All right, Linda, we have to take a break. Thank you for calling. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Back on the Gardening Show in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the number. It's the Gardening Show. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Bob Graves with us today. This email came in from Ann. Ann writes, we planted tomatoes, which were doing great until mid-August, when they started to have yellow leaves with black spots at the bottom, which worked their way up the plant and eventually killed them. What disease is this, and what can I do to prevent it next year? That's question one.
Well, it sounds pretty normal, especially if you planted them early. And as we've been talking about the apple scab, you know, the leaf drop on apples, crab apples being prevalent and prolific, tomatoes, same deal, same humid weather is going to cause some leaf diseases. Late blight is the standard one, usually browning from the bottom up, and it's pretty common, and we're always telling you to, you know, the next year rotate and put your tomatoes in a different location.
Right.
Any tomato debris that's still in the garden now, you would try to remove, and you can compost it, but maybe not put it in the compost pile that you might put back in the garden anytime soon.
There are some pretty decent organic fungicides that you could put on, but you have to do it before you see the problem.
All right. This one. Oh, well, the second question here. Also, I planted raspberries in the spring, and they're sprouting runners. Can I transplant these runners now, or should I wait until spring? And that's from Ann.
And that's what raspberries do. You plant one, and usually if you're planting the first year, whatever you're planting isn't going to do much, the actual wood you see there, and then new shoots will come up. Those new shoots are the ones that are going to winter and then produce fruit next July. They're going to flower in May and then fruit in July. So if you transplant those now, that would still occur. But the idea is you're creating this bed where those new shoots, those new runners can come up every year.
It's going to kind of multiply itself. You may not even need to divide them out.
Another question about raspberries. This one is from Agnes. Agnes writes, we have had black cap raspberry bushes for years. We have pruned out the dead and made way for the new. This summer they dried up, gave very little fruit. Most looked like they were dying. During September they leafed, looked healthy and perky, even the ones that were dying. What should we do? We were thinking of just digging them all up, thinking there may be a disease, fungus, or something that will return. But their return has made us rethink this. We hate the thought of not having them next year. That is from Agnes in Albany.
I guess the first thing I would consider is definitely treating them, you know, like a cultivated plant. It sounds like that's what they're doing. But to go in there maybe early and take out everything that's old, all of the previous, you know, this summer's old wood. So, and I'm feeling like what she's seeing is the new wood. Suddenly the new wood has sprouted up, and that's mostly what we're looking at. But
maybe probably just need them in a good renovation or rejuvenation type of thing with the older plant.
You know, they dropped off when it got dry too, because
it was it's a nature, it's a natural really self defense too. If they can't hold the fruit of the leaves and it's getting too dry and they don't have the water or nutrients,
self preservation,
they'll drop it.
All right, back to the phones we go. Phil in Pittsfield. Phil.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Okay. I've got two questions. One, I've got a difficult weed in my lawn. It's pretty common. It's Creeping Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
Which spreads, and I haven't found a good way to deal with it.
Well, you know, if you want to use herbicides, you're gonna get a broadleaf weed killer. They're all pretty much similar, but my experience with it been it'll take you multiple applications over probably a year. You apply it once, you may do it again in a month, you may do it again in the next season, and the next season after that. It's a hard weed to get rid of.
It is a lot of hand pulling on that weed.
Alternatively, that weed usually moves in where you have lost the grass or whatever it was growing there previously. So the ground is no longer able to support the grass. It's maybe compacted. Maybe it was the place the mower hit the ground a little too hard and scuffed it up a little bit. So those areas that it's in, you could work on. You could loosen that soil. You could add some compost and reseed those areas. And if you're willing to pull up that plant, it does come up. I mean,
organic lawn care is all about getting good quality grass to outcompete the weeds, really. Mm. So it takes some fertilizing and
soil.
Cultivating soil.
Yeah, building soil.
Not
usually
mowing too hard.
Soil.
Too often.
Don't pick up your clippings. Leave your clippings.
Yep,
a lot of these
plants like that bad soil. If the soil gets compressed or compacted or it's just off, then that gives these other plants that sort of edge, because they do better in like those really bad environments.
Check your pH, too.
Yeah, and pH, as I was going to say.
Yeah, all about soil quality here.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. And now over to Diana in Gilderland. Diana, you're on.
Hi, how are you? Question regarding white pine weevil.
Yeah.
Had it in two white pines last year. I cut the tops out of them down to the healthiest whorl. And sure enough, this summer, impacting Norway spruce trees from 3 feet high to 9 feet high. Any help?
Yep. What is white pine weasel?
Well, white pine weevil.
A weevil.
Is a pest of white pine. It kills the terminal. And the lumber folks out there really hate it because it creates, white pines as they grow with crooks in them and not grade A timber. people that aren't so worried about that part of it and just want to keep a healthy tree tend to not worry about the pest as bad because it does kill the terminal, but you can always retrain a new terminal and away they grow. And as long as you're training up a new terminal, you're good. It never kills the plant, which is the good news. It only kills the terminal. Now, that is not the same pest that's attacking your spruce. That would probably be a sawfly larva that's gone in there and killed the terminal. So the symptom is the same. They, you know, both of these pests kill the terminal, but it's sort of the same thing. It won't kill the entire plant. It just kills the terminal. Retrain a new new leader, and away you go. If you really wanted to do something there, they do injections for these types of problems where you could actually, like the doctor would give you a shot in your sort of veins and arteries or whatever, same thing, and you take it internally. Well, the tree is sort of the same way. It's quite effective on control on these pests. You inject it, you know, and when that pest starts to feed, it would pick up the nasty chemical.
After the trees get big enough, you don't really care all that much. Either.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
hardly notice it.
It's sort of like you had bad luck, and, you know, it happened twice in a row, two slightly different things. It's not typically going to be something that's going to plague you annually.
It should, not usually.
And what is the Norway spruce invader?
Most likely, probably a pine or a sawfly larva, probably. But there's a number of things that'll kill the terminal. But it's not the white pine weevil. That's for sure, because that one's just
That was just a coincidence.
Yeah, just coincidence. There's a number of different pests that kill the terminals. But in both cases, if you're looking at really healthy plants and you only see the terminal dead, we know it's one of those invaders that attack the terminal. The good news about that is it will never kill your plant.
Right, and I did create a new terminal leader.
And that's what you want to do.
White pine.
And you're going to want to do that same thing to your spruce.
Yes.
Okay.
Same concept.
Diana, thanks very much. 800-348-2551, the number. And now to Nicola in Rensselaer.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a star magnolia that's at least 30, possibly 40 years old, and it has a horrible infection of magnolia scale. Mm. Now, I keep pets. I don't want to use any kind of chemical that could kill off any dog, cat.
Well, this you're coming up to the right...
Or whatever that's in the vicinity of my house.
We got an idea for you.
You're coming up to the right time of year to treat that. The crawler stage of that insect is most active in October, so it's most vulnerable at that point. And a horticultural oil would be the way I would go with that. That's, you know, it's basically an oil product. It's not a nerve poison.
What's horticultural oil?
It's a
paraffin based.
Yep, and it smothers the crawlers. It smothers. If you sprayed it on a scale before the crawlers are there, it would have very little effect on the actual scale. But the as Bob said, the crawler is vulnerable, so it's another stage of life for that scale. And then this oil, horticultural oil, organic product, not going to hurt any pets or people, suffocates them. In its simplest form.
And so this is something that gets, it's a paraffin that is mixed with water. So it's oil and water. It stays, in solution for a little while. Someone is going to have to really douse all of the stems, all of the wood of the magnolia. Yeah. So if this is a 10, 12 foot plant, you're going to need, you know, several gallons of some of product to make that happen, of water with the oil in it.
Okay. Contact killer like this, if you don't hit it, you don't kill it.
Yep. So you would want to use, you know, like a tank sprayer, an expensive tank sprayer that has a little bit of pressure so it can force that product up into those branches. Okay. And you really want to spray underneath everything so it's not just on top. Nooks and crannies. I can't emphasize the nooks and crannies on that enough. Get all the nooks and crannies covered. Really,
right.
It
is. It's very effective.
It
works
is.
Quite well. We've had good success.
Well, thank you for the call. Now to Judy in Clifton Park. Judy.
Hi. I heard a gentleman before ask about moles. We've been infested with them in this area between the rabbits, the chipmunks, and now the moles are just taking over. Throughout the last months, I've brought in topsoil, lawn soil, et cetera, planted seed. It's grown beautifully, but the tunnels just obviously uproot the whole stuff. And as I stamp it down, then I'm left with areas of just brown, soil. Two questions. Number one, we've tried every repellent. The lawn services have assured us that the grub control has taken care of that, that they're after worms and bugs and everything else. How do we get rid of them? And what can I do over winter to make sure I don't get them back in the spring?
Well, they're right. The primary food source of moles is earthworms. And obviously, there's nothing you want or could do about earthworms. You know, one of the most effective ways, it's somewhat tedious, but you can use mouse traps.
No way.
Yeah, you take mouse traps, you bait them with peanut butter, you put them on the lawn, and then you set a garbage can or a pot upside down so that you don't get a bird or something going after it. Mm-hmm. And I've had people catch 40 or 50 of them that way. It's tedious. You know, it's really hard to get rid of moles. It's very tough.
I could say then I have to dispose of the bodies.
Yeah, well, that's as I say.
Yeah. On the flip side, as a tree guy, I would say that the moles are not the worst thing to have in your lawn, because it's not really going to ever hurt your plant per se. It's not a hurting plant. Okay. It's an aesthetic. Another one of these aesthetic things that look unsightly and kind of annoying, but at least you know it's not going to hurt any of your plants, so it's not that bad of a pest. And you have a lot of critters in your lawn, exactly. Voles are not the same thing.
Okay, so moles, okay. Voles, not so much.
It means you also have a lot of biological activity in your lawn, which is not a bad thing either.
Yeah, and moles are usually, although maybe you can tell me wrong, but moles are usually more active fall, certainly winter if the ground doesn't freeze, and then spring. And between, May, June, and now, they're usually not an issue. So, fixing some of the areas now, maybe getting ready to fix some of the areas again in the spring. Yeah. And then once you're out there running the mower around, spending more time in the yard, there's more, predator visibility. It's not a big deal.
Let's quickly go to Jim, who both emailed us and is on the phone. Jim, we'll take your phone call. Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. You betcha.
Yeah. We planted about 2,000 square feet of new lawn in May, and we have now discovered the topsoil came with jumping worms, which have killed almost all the grass. Hmm. So kind of two questions. Is there any way to remove them other than one at a time? And we have heard of solarization, or spreading black plastic producing heat on summer days, which will kill them en masse. If we pursue this, is it necessary to do the entire 2,000 square feet at once, or could we do it in smaller units like 500 square feet? And are there any other solutions?
That's my
question.
The jumping worms are, the Asian jumping worms are, certainly starting to be more noticeable. To have them affect a lawn, and everything that I've read, and that's not everything yet, but everything that I have read, haven't seen that to be an issue that they would affect the open lawn area. The primary issues is they're living in garden situations. They're living under mulch. They're breaking down the mulch rapidly, not necessarily killing the plants, but using up the nutrients
faster. They're using the organics too quickly
than we would like them to. And the real problem is when they move into natural areas, primarily forests, that they're working over what's called the forest duff, the leaves that lay down on the forest all summer long, slowly breaking down, feeding the trees slowly. They're eating that up really fast, so they're sort
of sterilizing. Yeah, we'd want to make sure that that's what killed your lawn.
Yeah.
I'd pursue it a little bit, maybe not assume that that's what it was.
Yeah, it was a tough year to start a lawn, or to not so much to start it, but to keep it going during the summertime, as we've been saying.
If it's hot and dry and sunny and it's killed dead at this point, I'd be looking at chinch bugs.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that the jumping worm is the culprit. It's not certainly going to help our cause, and it's way worse in the native woodlands, like we had talked about. Eating the organic matter in the woodlands is a real big problem, but it's also not something that happens instantly. You get these jumping worms on your topsoil, and they're not eating the roots of the plant. So I tend to think that there's probably some other things going on. It's not saying that the jumping worms are good in your lawn, but I think that maybe they're just part of a bigger potential problem.
How far do they jump?
Oh, they just really
feet. No,
really?
No, they jump around like
just kind of
like,
wiggle around
like worms on steroids. You put them in your hand. They're quite good for fishing.
We only have about 15, 20 seconds here. This email came in from Nick. I have a large mulberry tree, taller than my two-story house, thicker than my leg by far. Can I cut this back enough to make a mulberry bush without killing it?
That's a pretty big cut.
It may sucker from the base.
It might. Yeah.
But I'd wait till spring.
Yeah, I tend to think I would cut it back in sections as well, not all at once.
All right. I had one that I cut really off, and it killed it.
Okay. Be careful, Nick. Well, thank you all for calling, and I apologize. So many people left on the line. It's the way it goes, and so many emails didn't get through. We do our best. We should probably make it a five-hour show next time.
Oh,
no?
Is that?
Well, I don't see a lot of enthusiasm. All right, let's just. All right, forget I mentioned it. Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, presenting Landscapes for Land's Sake art exhibit October 12th through the 14th in Washington County. Opening reception October 12th, noon to 5 p.m. to benefit farmland protection. agstewardship.org. At Curtis Lumber, announcing their new kitchen showrooms featuring kitchen design trends and cabinets from Wellborn and Merlot and quartz countertops from Cambria Quartz, CurtisLumber.com. CurtisLumber.com. That's it. Thanks to our guests, Greg Ward, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, for being here. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Kayleen White. Our producer is Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show... Oh, this is great. It's the folks from Wolf's Beer Garden. We'll have some German food und some beer and do an Oktoberfest. Right now, the Capital Connection.